This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Have you ever wanted to open a restaurant, launch your own food brand, or dive into the ever-changing world of food media? Well, buckle up. Join us for Aspiration to Action, a special live podcast on Monday, June 3rd at Haven's Kitchen in Manhattan. Zara Tangora and Bretton Scott, hosts of Life's a Banquet, will lead us through tales of the good, the bad, and the transformative. Featuring food world innovators and HRN hosts, Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly, Eli Sussman, host of The Line, along with his brother Max, and Allison Kane, host of In the Sauce, in conversation with Jenny Britton Bauer. Light refreshments will be provided by Paris Gourmet, Wolfer Estate Vineyard, and Tahani. Get your tickets before they sell out by going to heritageradionetwork.org/action.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. That's a weird intro, Nastasia. It's going from
it's pretty good.
It's going from from Cherish. It's got to roll with it. Okay, we'll do it. Okay, we'll do the intro. Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live. Where am I? I'm in Hollywood Hills. We're not on the Heritage Radio Network yet because we're recording pre-recorded, and we're in the Hollywood Hills. We're coming to you with a special I Love LA Los Angeles tour of Cooking Issues.
We're as close to the Hollywood sign as you can possibly be.
That's right, and we were introduced, by the way, people we have with us today, we have, of course, Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
Yeah, good. Yeah. All right, we have Rebecca, the boondoggler, our intrepid marketing guru.
The boondoggler.
Not even going to say hello?
I'm shaking my head right now, and that's all you're going to get.
I can see you. You're not shaking your head. You're lying to the listening audience.
I was giving you death eyes.
Oh, death eyes. I appreciate that. We got Jack Schramm, head bartender. Jack Schramm,
hello.
What's going on? Yeah, how you doing? So this is basically, along with Austin Henley, who's at Major Domo out here in L.A., this was the team that we've been running around doing things like Harvard and Stone, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about it later. We do not have Matt in the booth because Matt lives in New York. Instead, and then we'll get into the story, Nastasia, we have Jeff in the booth. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, and we are at his house in the Hollywood Hills. This might be the closest house to the Hollywood sign that exists on planet Earth. True or false?
That's true.
Yeah. And this is all, and here's why, even though it's hard to go into a jet engine wine intro out of Cherish, the reason Nastasia chooses to stay at this house when we come out here is not just the Hollywood sign, but because the association actually hung out here when they were doing the album that had songs such as Cherish on it, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
And one other bit of information is that David Crosby was introduced to Graham Nash at a party at this house by Mama Cass, who lived next door.
So some gnarly, she didn't, where did she choke on the bologna sandwich?
Not here.
Okay. So I had to bring it back to cooking. I always have to bring it back to cooking. So my point is that some gnarly stuff has taken place in this building. True. I mean, it has to have been that era of folk. I mean, right? I mean, the party stories. When did you get involved in this house?
Bought it in 87.
So who was living there before? Was it still rock and roll types, or was it?
They used to have orgies here, actually. I think on Saturday nights. That's what I heard.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Saturdays.
A lot of windows
saying.
In the bathroom.
Unfortunately,
people.
We're checking out on Friday.
What? all right.
Dave's so upset right now.
So Nastasia, you want to tell them why we're out in LA, what we were doing?
Sure. Yeah, we're taking over two bars, and then we're doing a bunch of Spinzall demos, and that's it, right?
So we were at Harvard and Stone. How did the Appleheads turn out?
Great, I think.
So for those of you that don't know, I don't know how you'd be hearing this and not knowing this, Nastasia and I have been for many years obsessed with the Applehead doll phenomenon. So Nastasia's like, we're going to do Appleheads. We're going to do it. We're going to do Appleheads for these drinks. And I was like, I don't really have time. So she's like, crap on you. I'm going to carve every – I carved two. Yeah. Out of all of the Appleheads, I carved two.
I did the remaining 58.
Yeah. And I dehydrated them for you, though, Stas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we're all worried.
Tell them why I didn't want to do it all.
Well, Nastasia believes that there is some sort of stereotype of a half Mexican, half Russian woman who moves from the Los Angeles area to New York to the West Side and just sits at home all day making Appleheads. To her, this is like a valid stereotype that she didn't want to be, so she wanted me to make.
Like when you collect cats, yeah.
How is it related to collecting cats?
There's nothing wrong with collecting cats.
You have a boyfriend.
This is getting deep into a non-cooking area that I don't know if you want to get into. So the question everyone had on the apple heads. So what you do is you take an apple. Stassi, why don't you give them the procedure? You take an apple,
you
right?
Peel it. You peel it, yeah.
Then you carve it.
You make a bunch of cuts.
Right.
To look like a face.
Ish, right?
Then you dip it in lemon juice.
Didn't you roll it in salt?
Salt after.
Oh, so lemon juice, then salt, mm-hmm. right?
And then
you semi-core it.
Yeah.
And we put it in the deep. You can. So back in the day, they used to have a Vincent Price shrunken head maker that was, you just like ripped apart your parents' lamp and put over 100-watt light bulb, the Vincent Price shrunken head maker with the apple, and you did one at a time. I have an Excalibur dehydrator, so I took a bunch of copper line and made hangers, and we could do like, I think we could do like 16 at once or more. That last batch, you did the whole batch in the dehydrator. She just let it go. You rip it out. Nastasia. I told Nastasia I thought we should use clove eyes for it because, you know, that's the legit thing, clove eyes. And, you know, that's old school. And she's like, no, I'm going to the cake decorating shop and buying, you know.
They're not googly.
Okay, they're not googly, but.
That's just because the pupils don't move.
Yeah. Edible cake eyes. The best thing I saw this week was Nastasia Googling the phrase cake hair.
So we ended up, and then she was going to put these fake hats on. We ended up actually not needing hats. Once the googly eyes are on them, they don't need hats, really.
Some got hats, and they look great. Rebecca was the stylist.
Yeah. I found a new calling, which is just putting a variety of small hats on apple heads, depending on the personality and what speaks to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had several that looked like Freddy Krueger, one that looked like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. One that looked like Jay-Z.
It did not look like Jay-Z. And in fact,
you were just inspired by Jay-Z when you were carving, I would say would be more accurate.
It didn't look anything like Jay-Z. Jack?
There was a minor semblance.
The guy, that photo.
Anyway.
Anyway.
So then we just make a cut in the bottom, and then we put that on the glass. We made a special cocktail for it because we were sick of making banana justino.
We did passion fruit.
We did old passion, which is you take passion fruit, you mix it in with, what did we mix it into? What did we use? We use plantation here?
Yeah, we use plantation original dark.
Yeah, mix it in, add the enzymes, spin it out, dope it with a little brown sugar, pour it over a rock, garnish with an apple head, and, you know.
It's a good drink.
It was good drink.
Yeah.
Good drink.
Yeah.
Everyone, can I eat the apple? You could try.
It's not food.
I don't think anyone ate one.
It's not poisonous.
No, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, you'll never get that at the bar. Why? Because, Jack, we do not
garnish. Make apple heads.
Or
use, or garnish.
Or non-functional garnish.
Yeah. Twist.
That seems like a pretty functional garnish to me.
It was so fantastic.
It gives you nightmares when you go home at night.
That's what we're looking for in a bar. Yeah, I don't know. So we sold all of those. We ripped through all of our drinks, like, super quickly.
We sold all the more drinks than we had planned. It was great. So
and
busy.
We were the busiest session that they've done there.
Nice. Yep. Harvard and Stone. Thanks, Aaron Polsky, for having us.
Old friends, great regulars came through, like Eric Tsai, who has been a Booker and Dax regular for years. Now he lives out here. It was so nice to see him.
Yeah.
It's great.
And you know who came from last week? Steve from Los Angeles. And I will read his poem again.
Oh, yes.
This is now the Cooking Issues poem. I had sushi from a chef who developed a technique for aging fish. I got to try some of this. An amberjack kompachi. Steve from Los Angeles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's really powerful.
He came to the bar and he was like, all right. I'm like, we're just going to keep reading that dang poem. All right. So we didn't do any other new drinks, right? Although
Talk about Skrull.
We ran out of all of our drinks. Mm-hmm.
So
Nastasia and I, at midnight,
store.
You have a grocery store out here on the West Coast, people, called Ralph's. I don't know if you know this, but back where I come from, that means vomit. So like for the entire rest of the trip, we're like, oh yeah, Ralph's. We're going to go to Ralph's. Like, is that also a West Coast thing? Does Ralph mean throw up in West Coast?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. We thought we were going to do blender versions of Thai basil daiquiris, which I know, they're only like 88% as good as a real Thai basil daiquiri with liquid nitrogen, but they didn't have any Thai basil. And we were in Thai Town.
Well, the Thai groceries are closed.
But the point is that, you know, like you go to like a crappy grocery store. I'm not boosting New York, but you go to a crappy grocery store in New York, it happens to be in like a Latin neighborhood, they have the goods. I can get the Latin ingredients there. You go to in Thai town, and they don't have Thai basil. I was disappointed.
What did we make instead?
So we just grabbed whatever mezcal Aaron Polsky had on the back bar. I think it was a decoration. How long had that stuff been there? Is he pouring that stuff?
Yeah, it was illegal.
Yeah, and then we just cilantro and parsley, which was the only green thing they had in quantities large enough. We made an orange syrup. We talked about orange syrup here before, right? So
just bricks it up to 50.
Right. So instead of acid adjusting the orange juice up to become the same thing as lime juice, I wanted to do split citrus. So we had lime juice already. We got some fresh OJ, and I think it's 780. Something like that, grams of sugar per kilo of orange juice equals 50 bricks, because remember, orange juice has like 10.5, 10.6% sugar in it. And we used that syrup, and it was good.
Yeah, it's a great drink.
Blender muddle, yeah.
Yeah.
What do we call that thing? Green.
What do you guys, can I have a teacher? We only have green.
We only have green left.
You can have green.
And then you started making daiquiris.
Well, no, we left at that point. But the point is,
where'd we go?
We were gonna do milk wash what?
We were gonna do just like a milk wash daiquiri, right? Like what was the backup?
We were gonna use that orange syrup as a milk wash. Then yesterday, which was Dr. the next J. day, we did a Spinzall training with the folks at Squirrel. We're not allowed to talk about the new place, right? No, no, yes, no.
I think we can just talk about more so what you guys are playing around with. I don't think, you know.
So we did a strawberry milk, seeing whether or not we could spin the solids from strawberries out of milk to make some sort of a milk. I don't know what they wanted to do.
Strawberry milk analog.
But it broke, and we got strawberry cheese.
Strawberry cheese and strawberry whey that was really delicious.
That shakes and foams up.
Yeah.
And then we showed them good old-fashioned milk syrup, because they wanted a heat-stable, acid-stable milk syrup. So we made milk syrup, which I've told you a million times, but it's equal parts sugar milk. Blend it in a blender, not too hard. You don't want to over foam it. Then once it's dissolved, you add for every liter of syrup, you add 1 ounce of 15% citric acid solution or about 2 ounces of lime juice. You blend it. You'll see it thicken up. And then once it thickens up, I call it like par baking. I call it par breaking. You're par breaking the milk so that when you're using it in your application, it won't really curdle out and break. And so they want to do a hot – we actually – it worked. We did juice plus milk syrup, steamed it. It steamed and held, and then added it to hot coffee. But Jack's like, nah, I'm going to do cold.
No, this is going to be much more delicious cold.
I'm going to do cold.
It was.
Cold brew.
Dave, get into –
We also went to the farmer's market.
Yes, that's true.
Because we cooked some dinner last night. Jack was like, I want to buy rabbits. We bought two rabbits. Guess how much two rabbits cost, people? Guess how much two rabbits cost? $100.
They were like $80.
Yeah, it was like $40 a rabbit. They're big.
They were very big, and they were delicious.
So, and they fed, what, 10 people?
We didn't have a lot of time because we were doing a lot of work outside. So the way we cooked them was we spatchcocked them. You know, like cut them. We opened them up, cut them down on the inside out, made them flat. They kind of like – they still look a lot like rabbits when they're flattened out, though.
Yeah.
I guess they look like a cross between a rabbit and a chicken when they're flattened out like that, because I'm so used to thinking of chicken spatchcocks. But then we did salt, pepper, mustard, garlic, oregano, lemon juice, oil, right?
Yeah.
Anything else?
You said garlic, yeah?
Say garlic. Rub that in, let it sit for sugar, a little sugar.
Balance.
Yeah. So we put a little sugar in, spatchcock, let that sit while we cooked our delicious, hyper expensive $20 worth of mushrooms that could fit inside of a small lunch bag.
They were very good.
You know what was really good? Out here is strawberry land. Like all those people, I'm sorry, Union Square, Green Market with your TriStars and all that. You come over here and the strawberries in the farmer's market
kick the ever loving
crap. They kick the ever loving crap out of what we can get. Am I right, Jack?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think, Stas? You like things? Oh, my God. And we had
The Mandarin Quats.
Oh, my God. The Mandarin Quats. Now, Nastassi and I have been to Mandarin Quat Heaven, Gene Lester's ranch in Watsonville, California.
Worst trip ever.
What? It was because Nastassi had, oh, my God. For the 2-hour lunch or the hour and a half lunch, we had 250 kinds of citrus. And she's never going to let me forget that she had, that we didn't bring our lunch and they brought a lunch. So we ate like a piece of rye bread.
And I've heard some terrible stories.
And we were told that salt's not allowed in restaurants in New York anymore. We're like, I'm pretty sure that's not true. Yeah. I,
I work in this business. Anyway, so she's never let me forget that, but you know, I'll never forget it as a fantastic experience because I got to taste 200 varieties of citrus, including a lot of those kind of mandarin quat things, but they weren't necessarily in high season, and we only had a couple of them. And I, have I mentioned this on air? If you eat only citrus for an entire day, have I mentioned this on air before, Anastasia?
Probably.
Okay, this is going to get a little gross. I apologize. But you know how people say, that guy thinks his what does he say? What doesn't stink?
Poop doesn't stink.
He thinks his poop doesn't stink. Whatever. Okay, I eat nothing but citrus, hard citrus. And when I go to eat something, I don't mess around. Jack's the same way.
It's true.
You don't mess around.
No, you eat.
It came out of me almost like it went in, pure citrus juice. And I was like, this is amazing. This is the best day of my life. Anyways.
Yeah, we're still working on the human clarified cocktail.
We can't get in. It's too much, too much, too much. So we bought those delicious. Do you remember her name? The farmer?
No, I don't. It's killing
who
me.
Who did the mandarin quats? They are delicious because they're more sour than a kumquat, slightly thicker skin, and I would say twice as big in every dimension, so four times the volume of a kumquat. Real good. Real good. What else do we buy? Oh, I bought some delicious dates. I forget the name of the date farmer, but California hybrid date. Everyone buys the medjool dates, right? Because they're delicious. And then occasionally people will go buy deglet, you know, deglets or zahidis or some other kind of date. But, and these are all the, like, you know, the well-known kind of dates that were brought in from places like Morocco, places like Iraq, all these places, Saudi Arabia. But there are some amazingly delicious California hybrid dates that are kind of micro because they've never been turned into big kind of date production. So the one we had yesterday was called Empress. So the next time you're in the Southern California area, I know it's going to be date season when? It's the end of summer is actual date season, right, for fresh dates, for new crop dates. I think it's the end of summer. Anyways, I encourage you when you're in the area to search out real date farmers. Find and ask. The medjools are great, whatever, but find some of their cool hybrid dates because although medjools are super silky and super sweet and big and they're delicious, like there's a variety of textures from bready to silky. The skin can be it can be firm, it can pop, it can have more of a candied texture. So there's a lot to do. Did you like that thing that the guy made us eat with the cacao nib?
Yeah, it was good.
So this guy, he's like, don't eat the date. Don't eat the date. Rip out the pit, stick this cacao nib in, and then eat it. It was good.
It was good.
But I think I would rather just have chocolate and dates.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll be the best piece of chocolate you've ever had.
Last thing about California, get into the van.
So, I don't know if you know this. Like, I'm a cheap man, and Nastasia Lopez is a cheap woman. This is perhaps how we got into business together, because we're cheap people. But the messed up thing is that we're cheap about different things, and we're also both of us, if you don't know us, right or wrong, Stas, so far. Like, we're both willing to do unreasonable things for minor reasons.
True.
So, like, Nastasia didn't want to deal with regular car people, so she's like, I'm going to – what is this fake Airbnb for cars called?
No, it's called Turo, and it's – you rent people's cars.
Yeah. So here's the thing about people's
just like
cars.
Random humans.
Yeah, random humans' cars.
Let's just clarify this. Like,
yeah, but they have ratings, stars. You know that they're
here's
good.
The thing about a random person's car. They may or may not be maintained. May or may not be maintained. So Nastasia has in her head, which by the way, I appreciate. She's like, I'm going to rent a Peace Bus, and then we're going to like be able to drive the entire like you know Booker and Dax Cooking Issues Existing Conditions Armada around Los Angeles, like you know like Cheech and Chong used to do back in the day, but without the marijuana, or I don't know. And then like you know we'll get out, we'll do whatever we're going to do. So she's super psyched about this Peace Bus, and she shows up. First of all, you could hear the brakes. How many miles away could you hear the brakes on that damn thing? I knew it was going to be a nightmare. Rebecca, the boondoggler, totally jinxed. Well, they got to know who I'm talking about, Rebecca. There's a lot of Rebeccas.
Have you referred to me as a boondoggler previously by name with Rebecca?
Like eight shows.
Nastasia makes me sing various boondoggle songs, like the, right?
Yes.
I won't do it now. Anyway, point is that Rebecca gets in and...
Wait, it has a full kitchen.
Ish.
Okay, full kitchen is if you are on your knees and you only want to do very limited things.
It's in a van.
Yeah, it's not like...
It's a full kitchen.
It's a full kitchen for a van.
The fridge door kept opening. I had to slam it shut from the front seat a lot.
Yeah, no cup holders, though.
So
no
I got in first.
Yeah.
I got into LA first. Nastasio's already here with the van, and I get on the phone with her when I'm off the plane, when I'm waiting for him. Like, you're picking me up, right? And she's like, yeah. She didn't tell me what the car looked like. She just said, it's the loud one. You'll hear it.
Yeah.
You'll hear it before you see it.
So anyway, so Rebecca is, I would say everyone would agree, the most reasonable of us.
Yes.
Yes.
It's been a big growing and learning experience for me this trip, I would say.
So she gets, first of all, this van, seats four, sleeps six. You figure it out. I don't know how the hell that's supposed
to work. It's actually just like this house. Except it's sleep six, but you can actually have 100 people here on a Saturday night. Yeah.
And the other thing that is similar about this house and that van is that they both move the same amount.
Well, get to it.
Because here's what happened. All right, so here's what happens. We're going down the highway.
We're playing music.
Stassi's like, I got to get gas because this thing gets like, you know, 5-6 miles to the gallon. So it's like draining. You can visibly see the gas meter going down as you're going down the highway. We pull into the gas station. She turns it back on again and...
Meanwhile, the whole time we're driving...
Well, you know, I don't know this yet.
Stassi and I were both aware that she goes, huh, the battery light's on.
Yeah, doesn't tell me what's going on. We pull into the gas station. She turns it off, turns it back on.
Yeah, but Jack, what did you say? You were like,
it's fine.
It's fine.
It's probably fine.
Yeah, people, let me tell you something. In an older car, you know, that doesn't tell you everything that's going wrong, when the battery light goes on, it means the battery's not charging. Without a battery, if you don't have a battery and the alternator's not working properly, as soon as the battery runs down, no more spark, no more engine, no go, right? So I'm like, oh my God. We're
but
in
at
a,
least
gas
we're
station.
At a gas station.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We're at a gas station.
On the road.
But like, at least, like, if there's a little bit of power in the battery left, when you turn it in an old car, you'll get click, 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 nothing. And this sucker was dead. And of course, none of us know that, like, in a VW, the engine is in the rear of the car. I'm like, did we throw the alternator belt? What's going on? We've never actually found out what's going on with the car. So we're dead on this thing. And the battery also in one of these things is right in the middle of the vehicle. So we're right next to a gas pump. So no one can pull in. Our jumper cables for this, it should tell you something. The first thing the guy said when he gave it to Nastasia was like, oh, the jumper cables are back here. That should have told you something, Nastasia.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you didn't think about it.
I did think it did hit me. He was like, the battery's here and the jumper cables are here.
In case you should need to know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then
he also kept referencing that you were going to sleep in the van.
Yeah.
And he did not think that you were going to be driving it around.
True. True.
So we jumper it. By the way, it takes very little electricity from the battery to keep the car running. Because as long as you're not running the radio or doing this other stuff, you're really just making the sparks, right? Ta, 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 ta.
But that being said, we're driving through Los Angeles in an old bus with the windows down. You think we're not going to put the radio on?
Yeah.
Like, right. No, but after we figured out it was a problem, we didn't put the radio on. Oh, the good news is... doesn't have any air conditioning. That's the other good thing. So it had an air conditioning at one point. I could see because I saw the compressor for it with no belt that the guy had cut off because he didn't want to maintain it. Whatever. So we get this guy to jumper us. We sit there for a while. We go. And I'm not sure in my heart. I'm like, was it a problem with the charging? In other words, is the alternator, are we going to be okay running as long as we don't turn it off? Oh, yeah. Nastasia also wants me to talk about the fact that, well, you're just making me look like a meanie. You're sitting there. We don't know what the heck's going on. And you're sitting there pounding Skittles. Like, you know, like you're, I don't know what. You're just sitting there pounding Skittles.
We hadn't eaten anything.
Who hadn't eaten anything?
Well, Jack and I had squirrel for breakfast, but then I get really hungry for lunch.
Yeah, we had a big, beautiful breakfast that
we're sitting with a dead bus at a gas station. She's just sitting there. We're all trying to rip the back thing off to look at the engine. She's like, man, Skittles. So I lost it a little bit.
You lost it.
Yeah, I lost a little bit.
You're just like, you're eating Skittles right now?
Yeah.
Which is fair.
So anyway, Stop eating Skittles! So we get going.
Wait, and about the person who approached you.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. So we're sitting there trying to...
Sweating,
trying to figure out what's going wrong with
it. You both got off a six-hour flight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Guy's like, can you spare any money? We were like, I don't even have a working car! I got nothing here! I'm trapped! You know? Pick on someone with a working car. So, like, we get the sucker going, and we can make it all the way. So we're, like, this house, I told you, it's the closest house to the Hollywood sign. You have to go on some snaky, windy roads. And the road bifurcates, like, 89 times before you get to the final one where this house is. And P.S., The cell service, Jeff, right or wrong, cell service up here, not so much. Not so much. No. And so we go.
I was navigating.
Yeah.
Getting us up there and doing a fine job. But what I said to Nastasia as we approached a turn was left, 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 left. She goes right.
She goes right. Now, also remember, we're in a peace bus on a road that's about as wide as like a baby stroller. Like a baby stroller can go up this road, maybe. So we end up at this place. I don't even know where it is. Dorcas Place, if anyone knows where that is.
Dorcas.
I put it into reverse to make a
U-turn. No, she pulls into an extremely rich person's driveway. How do I know they're extremely rich? Because they had one of those automatic gates with a punch pad and a little camera so you can say who you are and a bunch of vehicles in their little McGillicuddy over there, right? In their little cul-de-sac, their private cul-de-sac. So we pull into it, but half the peace bus is still on Dorcas Place. And then right there, the spark plugs are like, you know what? I'm done. Poosh. Dead. Nothing.
Right at this person. Yeah,
she throws it in reverse, and it was just silence.
And Jack has no bars. Nastasia has no bars. I have no bars. Rebecca the boondoggler, you come to the rescue. You have a half a bar of service or something. One bar.
And things that the stories you're telling. Who's exactly the boondoggler?
Another thing, like, I had not experienced any good old-fashioned L.A. road rage when I was out here until this happened. So what are we going to do? We have like a 19, like early 80s, like peace bus halfway into Dorcas Place. Dorcas Place, you know, I could barely walk on it, much less drive a car. And like this guy comes around the corner at like 85 miles an hour in his little Beamer.
Whips around,
slams on the brakes like, my groceries are all over my car. I'm like... And what?
He wasn't mad at us, though. He was mad at the truck that was coming down.
I'm like, but and what?
Yeah.
Like, we are here. We live here now.
The good news is.
Yeah, so Rebecca had one bar of service. We got Austin Henley, you know, formerly of Booker and Dax, now at Major Domo, who we're doing all these projects with, to drive over, jump us. I'm like, give us enough power to get, you know, get the spark plugs running back to where the house was. We made it. We called it in. We're like, you pull a flatbed up here, you freak show, and get this thing the hell out of here. Anyway.
Did you get a refund yet?
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Since opening in August 2015, Foster Sundry has evolved into a neighborhood hub for weekend brunch, weeknight groceries, coffee on your morning commute, a draft beer after work, and so much more. Their cheese counter, whole animal butcher, and produce section make grocery shopping a pleasure. Foster Sundry also offers catering and wholesale. Learn more at fostersundry.com. That's FOSTERSUNDRY.com.
Oh, I also mentioned, I forgot to mention. So, real cooking tip. Not a driving tip. We were going to have so many cool driving-related cooking tips in that peace bus, too.
I know.
We were going to cook all kinds of stuff in the peace bus.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sears all shoot.
Sears all shoot in the peace bus. We were going to take it down to the Los Angeles River and do Sears all cooking in the peace bus. Didn't work out for us.
Next time.
We are not renting that peace bus again.
No.
What do you mean next time?
Never again.
Different peace bus.
Never again. No. No more peace buses.
We're going
to
rent from reputable people. Yes. By the way, there was a sign on the side of this peace bus. It said... rent me for your next adventure. And I had to stare at it while we're like trapped on Dorcas Place with this guy's Beamer's grocery splattered all over his front car because they didn't have seatbelts.
Honestly, it was an adventure though. They just didn't mention that they were creating the adventure. Like the van is the adventure.
Yeah. Anyway, so remember back, we had purchased two very large expensive rabbits. I was like, what kind of rabbit is it? He's like, man, I don't know, California.
California rabbits.
He's like, that's the variety. I'm like, no, it's not. You're just making that up. Yeah. You jerk. He was a nice guy, actually. So we spatchcocked it, marinated it, and then we used I used what I've learned from Tandoor. Remember, everything I now know about cooking, I've erased all of my old memories, and I do everything based on the Tandoor technique, which is use preposterously high heat and then just go off and on as many times as it takes to get the stuff done. Now... and then you can let it cool down and then fire it one last time to rewarm it as long as you keep it like relatively warm. So you always have a nice crust and you don't overcook it. So remember, it usually works on stuff that's been lightly tenderized because you're going to overcook some of the outside. That's why we had acid in the marinade, sugar, all that crap. Spatchcocked, made it flat. We should have pounded it, Jack, right?
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, I don't think we needed to.
Oh, if we pounded it, we would have wrecked all those miniature bones. Rabbit's got a lot of bones, people.
Yeah.
Anyways, so my wife wouldn't have liked it. She hates, she does not, we don't cook rabbit at home because she doesn't enjoy
pulling
eating
bones out of her
she
mouth.
She doesn't enjoy the bone thing.
She doesn't enjoy tiny bones.
I will leave that. So then, so what we did is we made like, you know, the surface of the sun, Jeff. We turned your grill into the surface of the sun by like putting like 8 loads of coal and like super hot. And then just we did both sides off on oil in between. I think we had to off on it 4 times, right? Like,
yeah, was it 3 and then
3 and we did one last one. And we did, yeah.
One final
so what
time.
You do is You put it on super high for like 2 minutes, flip it, right? It hasn't formed a good crust at this point. Then for the first cook, pull it off, let it rest, right? Until it's, you know, gets down to kind of a lukey warm kind of a thingamajig. Then whoosh, back on, do that for 2 minutes, and then pull it. And then usually some of the ones where you're actually trying to pulse the heat into it, so you're trying to get the heat up relatively quickly, you won't let it cool all the way down before you hit it again. So let's say you're cooking something like shrimp. Shrimp is going to be viciously overcooked, right? I mean, pretty much it's going to be viciously overcooked no matter what. But with that one, you almost let it cool all the way back down between firings, and you keep it well oiled because all you're trying to get is a nice exterior, because the inside, as soon as it starts cooking, is overcooked. In a rabbit, not the case, because you need to get the thighs especially and part of the, you know, the haunchy stuff cooked, and it's a little bit thicker. So you're going to need to go off on while it's still relatively warm. So the whole trick of this kind of high multiple heat cooking is how long you let it rest off the heat before you hit it again with your you know, quick on, quick off. But, you know, I think we hit it pretty well. What do you think?
It was perfect.
Yeah, rabbit.
Yeah.
Hossen.
Delicious.
Off on, off on. So that's going to be, you know, the subject of half of the book that Nastasia doesn't believe I'll ever write.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You believe I'm never going to write it.
I don't think you're going to write it.
Which one? The Miracle of Moisture Management?
Yes.
Yeah, and in my mind, it's not supposed to be called that. It's supposed to be called something else. But in my mind, I just keep calling it the Miracle of Moisture Management.
Maybe that's what it should be called.
Yo, bring moisture back, people.
Tonight we're going to be at Night Market.
Right? We're going to Night Market, but which one?
West Hollywood.
Doesn't matter because...
No one's going to hear it.
Yes.
But and I'm wait, just reiterating that because you guys have asked me that like 6 times over the past 24 hours.
Do they really call West Hollywood WeHo?
WeHo. Yes.
They do.
Okay. Shall we do some questions?
Yes, we have 10 minutes.
Okay. Ryan Miller wrote in from, he's Kansas City, right? Kansas City. Our restaurant group recently acquired a family-oriented burger restaurant here in the Kansas City area that has 3 units around the metro area. In addition to tightening up some of the beverage operations, now I have that song Tighten Up going through my head. Tighten Up. Tightening up some of the beverage operations and procedures in their bars. I've been tasked to upgrade the milkshake and adult milkshake program. Now I have Khalees going through my head. Not. Oh, man. I wish we could play that. You know, she's a cook.
Yes, you've talked about this.
Mm, all right. I remember I was almost going to be on that pilot. They were almost going to get her to be the other judge.
Time Machine Chef?
Yeah. They're almost going to get Khalees to do the thing. Oh, and then I wonder whether she would have used that song as the dinch. Anyway. Adult milkshakes. As we get started, all milkshakes will be using the same vanilla ice cream base, which purposely has a high butterfat content per the owner's request, and I'm sure to the delight of most Americans. My question is, how do I maintain the texture and, most importantly, the thickness that is necessary in a fine milkshake when adding spirits, liquors, etc.? My initial attempts, while tasty and delicious, have come up thin and lacking that milkshakiness that we all want when we think burgers, fries, and shakes. I'd like to use a mixture of spirits and liqueurs in each, for example, a malted version featuring 50.5% bourbon and 31%, these are alcohol levels, spirit-based Amaro. Is this even possible, or do we need to rethink entirely? Keep in mind that while having many competent bartenders on staff, special ingredients such as liquid nitrogen, etc., are simply not an option in these heavy-volume establishments. We have just installed a high-velocity Hamilton Beach 3-spindle mixers at each establishment specifically for the milkshake program. Ryan Miller. Okay. So the answer is, if you're not willing to do anything out of the ordinary, they're going to be thin, right? So you can either reduce the quantity of liquor in, use liquor that has a relatively high viscosity. I mean, we've all had Bailey's shakes in the past, right, Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they thin out quickly because the alcohol content is just going to cause everything to melt down faster. What I suggest you do, go on Cooking Issues. Nastassia, is Cooking Issues still a porn site or is it back to being Cooking Issues?
It's back.
Okay. Look up my recipe for Gelan-based ice cream. What I think you're going to want to do is specifically for the alcoholic ones, if you can have a separate ice cream base spun for it, you turn the ice cream base into a fluid gel. So I use Gelan, low-acyl Gelan, and it used to just be CP Kelco, but it went out of patent, so you can get it. So what you do is you set the milk. So let's just say you have milk, cream, eggs. You set the milk portion. Let's say you're going to have 1,000 mils, right? So 500 mils milk, 500 mils cream, and then, I don't know, like 3-4 egg yolks, whatever it's going to be in the recipe, right? You take just the milk, and you put like a full 1% of Gelan, so that's 5, and then a thickener. So you could use LBG, you could use any of those. You bring up the milk, and you boil the milk with the Gelan. Then you add in, as it starts to come down in temperature, you add a little bit of calcium. The recipe is there. You add a little bit of calcium, the eggs, whisk the eggs in, add a little bit of calcium, and then the cream. Do I add the cream before it sets? I don't remember. You want to keep it so above the temperature where the Gelan sets, but without having to boil the cream up. Then you set it. It sets hard like a gel. You blend that gel, and that gel now has the consistency roughly of a milkshake, and it's completely stable. Then you freeze it like ice cream. You make a milkshake, and then even as it warms up, it won't melt, in quotes. It'll just get it'll just get warm. Which is kind of gross.
I got an email in question.
Oh, yeah? What do you got for me?
Mike in Brooklyn asked, why is everything so disorganized?
In life or with us?
With us.
huh. But they can't be listening live, so what's that? Like, when did they email this?
Now.
But, like, regarding what? Like there's different reasons why different things are...
feed and everything. People have been following what's been going on here.
Why is everything in our life so disorganized? Yes. Well, because... we try to do more than we are able to do.
Yes, it's true.
You know, you try to do more than you're able to do, and it's a crap show. You know what I mean? It's like, but at least you can do something interesting, right? I mean, the odds that we could do anything at all if we tried to only do what we knew we could accomplish would be zero. We would get nothing done.
Well, like when we got in, we did the bar thing. We had the car trouble. Then we did the bar thing. We went to bed at 4. We woke up at 8, went to the farmer's market. And then all of yesterday, we did stuff.
Yeah, but it is disorganized because we try to add too much stuff into...
No, I'm impressed with us. But it is disorganized.
We accomplished a lot.
Oh, yeah. So yesterday we also went to someone's house.
Some guy's house.
Right?
A listener.
Yeah.
A great listener.
Yeah. And we made Saratoga Palomas.
Kyle.
We made Saratoga Palomas. And we also, I'm not going to say it on the air because A, we're not political, and B, we don't curse on this radio air. But like Empirical Spirits Habanero Distillate, we did with grapefruit juice, carbonate. Oh, that was delicious.
Yeah, those guys were cool. They had some fun stuff there.
Yeah.
Great house.
Yeah. Really nice house.
Yeah. You people with your Hollywood Hills and your pretty views and your nice weather. Garbage. Garbage.
Dave, we have 5 minutes.
Okay, geez Louise. Let me see what I got. So you're saying I didn't answer the ice cream question last week?
No.
All right. So you sure?
I can say.
Did I answer it 2 weeks
you want
ago?
Me to say. No.
It's John Riper. You know him.
Yeah, we talked about John Riper, but we didn't get into the question.
All right, I'm pretty sure I did this. Okay. I'm pretty sure I can remember answering this question.
Then don't do it. Then don't do it.
John, did I answer the question about Acme ice cream? Did I talk about the Stolting Ross custard machine? Did I talk about the fact that the only continuous freeze ice cream machine that a normal person can buy, and by that I mean under 20 grand because they're like 12 grand, I looked it up, is the Stolting Ross frozen custard machine that only puts about 20% overrun into your base and has really... I did talk about this because I said that if you have no overrun, which is what the people at Acme claim that they have, overruns the amount of air in an ice cream base, that if you have no overrun, then it's just a frozen block of cream. That's what we call a greasy popsicle, not ice cream, right? So you want to get... you need some overrun, and they're just manipulating the overrun to be lower. And didn't I talk about the ways to manipulate overrun?
That's what I call a greasy popsicle.
That's a greasy popsicle. But I'm pretty sure I did. I'm pretty sure I talked about this. John, if I didn't talk about it, get back to me. This we did not do. We did not talk about Pickle Brian. I'm glad Jack is here today for this. Greetings to Nastasia, Dave, Matt, who's not here at all, so I guess that's Rebecca and you, Jeff. In this house, we have become fond of Bloody Marys with pickle brine in them. We are now going through brine faster than the pickles. I would like to make my own brine, but have a question or two. I like Clausen brand pickles, so thought to start with this knockoff recipe, which is from a blog called Amanda's Cookin' with no G. Amanda's Cookin', like cookin'.
Mm-hmm. With an apostrophe or no?
Not on the URL. It's just cookin'. Oh. Like, you remember, like... You ever seen those Finsler film G.I. Joe things? We're not cooking. Dave, you're not cooking. Dave. Anyway, it's like that. If you haven't seen Finsler films, it was one of the early viral videos. Pork chop sandwiches. It's from that one. Yeah. Anyway, go watch it. This involves the recipe. Involves fermenting, in quotes, the pickles on the counter for a few days prior to putting them in the fridge. How would you approach this if you didn't care to actually produce any pickled cucumbers? Is this step important to the brine flavor? I.e., are the pickles important to the pickle brine? Yes. Or do you have your own recipe for this? I checked Liquid Intelligence. Lastly, any comments on the comments in that recipe? There are two micro debates about what's going on. One is whether the fuzz that some folks grow on top of a pickle is mold or an acceptable byproduct of the fermentation. The other is whether you should boil and cool the brine or just mix it cold. Thanks, Glenn Holden from Aurora, Colorado. Okay. So... the long and short answer is that in the way that you need some base in there to ferment in order to have the brine ferment, right? So you need to have something for the lactic acid bacteria to grow on to actually get that pickle brine flavor. The fuzz is almost certainly not mold. It's probably bacteria, and you're seeing like the dead, burnt out bodies of the bacteria, or the living like bacteria kind of stuff that's growing on the outside or on top of the pickle stuff. That's all fine and good, right? But you're gonna need some sort of substrate. What I recommend you do is make classic pickles, right? So, or buy them, right? And in general, like if you're going to can them for a long time, that's when I use a jar. Most of the time when I'm making my own pickles, I keep them live. So it's just salt and, you know, whatever flavors you want, garlic, coriander, yada, yada, yada. You can get the nice flowering dill. Flowering dill, not regular dill, flowering dill, flowering dill. Did I say it? Flowering dill with the little umbels. You put that in and you make it, get the right amount of salt. You let it ferment. You can pull it at whatever point. I noticed in Amanda's cooking that she appears to like a half sour. Jack, how are you feeling about half sour?
I love a half sour.
You know why? You know
I
why?
Like crunch.
You like the crunch. I told you what my trick is.
Half and half?
You go to the pickle store, because I buy pickles from a guy in a big pickle jar, big bucket, like big 55-gallon drums of pickles. I was like, yo, give me some half sours. But give me full sour juice.
So strong.
That's the pro move.
Ugh.
That's the pro move.
Beautiful.
And if you leave your half sours out long enough, guess what they become?
Sours.
Full sours. Right. So anyway, so what you do is you can pull them at the last minute. The half sours will be brighter green and they will have a better texture. But you actually don't want that. Since you want to maximize the pickle brine flavor, what I suggest you do is ferment a whole bunch of pickles, blend all of those suckers, add some SPL to them, spin them out in a Spinzall brand centrifuge, which you can buy on Amazon from the Booker and Dax Corporation. And then that pickle brine, you'll get a very high yield of that pickle brine. You can then, if you need to, jar and heat that to stabilize it. And it will keep for the... approximately till the next ice age or nuclear war, whatever happens first.
That's it.
What do you got? You got anything to say on the way out, Nastasia?
You should sing the song on the way out.
Sing the song on the way out? Well, this has been Cooking Issues semi-live. It's actually pre-recorded from the Hollywood Hills. Thanks, Jeff, for recording us. And are we all going to sing this?
Let's all sing it. Ready?
Cooking Issues is the word. Are we doing it? No.
We're already doing it.
We're doing it.
Well, you weren't saying. You're laying back.
Ready?
One, two.
This is going to be a nightmare.
One, two, three.
Cooking Issues is the word. What key are we doing this in?
Dave, I don't know.
I don't know how many times that I have said Justino. I actually, literally, I sing that to Dax all the time. So when we're walking the dogs, I don't know how many times that I have said Justino. And he's like, a lot, Dad, a lot. Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.